County Board member.
Carrie Stanfield, Executive Director.
And can the folks on the phone please introduce yourself for the record? You'll have to unmute yourselves, so I can introduce yourselves.
Ken Foster.
Hi, this is Rebecca McGovern.
Hello, James Baker with Ken Foster is on.
Rebecca McGovern with Ken Foster is also on.
Jason Mika with Education Affiliates at Fortis College.
Samantha Donko with Ken Foster College.
So, why don't we just take half a minute, and I'd like to acknowledge that yesterday we buried a former president, David Swift, and I'd just like to take a moment to acknowledge a life of service, but to also put it in perspective of the service that takes place in this building, and particularly this board. We have staff members who dedicate their careers to serving the state of Arizona and education in Arizona. We have board members who volunteer. So let's just take a moment of just personal reflection. Thank you. Hey, Mr. Sines, I'd like to make a statement.
Okay, yeah. I have learned do not get the flu before finance committee meetings, so next year I'm going to plan my illnesses better. So for this past quarter, we showed income at -6,800 for Q3. As of today, for Q4, we're at -3,200, so we've cut that about in half. We do seem to be having about the same issue a lot of educational programs are. As the economy improves, unemployment drops, people seem to opt for work instead of education. And we've seen a few of our students leave for that reason. You know, they've had some job opportunities, and so they pause their program or step out. As of right now, we are on track. We have talked about an employment testing program we're starting for our company on January 1st, and that's on track, which should increase our revenue as well as drive new leads. I think off the top of my head, that's the only thing I can think of to share.
And thank you. Questions from the board?
So, Mr. Sines, it looks like, if I understand this right, that the $6,800 loss that you're referring to is cumulative for the entire year. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So, you didn't lose $6,800 in a quarter, but you cumulatively lost $6,800.
Yeah, I said that wrong. I was doing good to remember the number today.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's fine.
And what would your projection be for year end? Would it be the 3,200 that you had mentioned?
I have learned never be optimistic, so I would say maybe the -3,200, no worse than the -6,800. I used to be more optimistic on things, but I figured it's better safe to be a little bit of a worry than to be, you know, over-optimistic, which is, it's still a lot better than what we did last year. And I think our next year with the new testing program and stuff should be significantly better than it is this year. It's just, like I said, our economy-driven with all of this, and it's very hard to give, you know, we've had sometimes when December is our worst month and sometimes when it's our best month, and sometimes when January 1st is our best, or the beginning of the school year because they go to school and their kids go to school. But we went all the way back, you know, in our numbers, and it's never predictable. So I don't want to be overly, like, throw out a number and say, yeah, here's what we're definitely going to hit.
So could you give us an idea of, on the total enrollment, it looks like at the end of the third quarter, you went 93 versus a forecast of 95. And now your forecast for the end of the fourth quarter was 100. So are you going to make that 100, or are you going to be, how's that going to work out?
We had a couple of students just dropped out to actually go back to work. And so I'm not sure if we're going to hit it or not. We were on track, I think they hit it. but we've had about 3 students drop recently, and 2 of them are actually have employment somewhere else, and so they're doing that. So I'm not 100% certain. It's possible, but it might be a little bit short.
Okay.
Mr. Steins, are you aware of what your cash balance is right now for your company?
I am not sure what our cash balance is in the account right now. We just had payroll go out, which is our lowest time of the month, so I'm not 100% sure.
Could you guesstimate what it is?
It's probably around 3 to 5, which is normally for what we kind of maintain.
3 to 5 thousand.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the update, Mr. Simon. We hope you feel better, and hope that your realism gives way to optimism by the end of the year. Look forward to seeing you in a few months. All right. Good luck.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Moving back to our regular scheduled programming, we have a discussion action on the financial status and license renewal. First up is Arizona College.
Okay. Don't forget minutes.
Yes. We need to note that the minutes for the September 27, 2018 Finance Committee meeting, that they were with an audio recording, and we have to accept the minutes. So I'd like a motion to accept the minutes.
So
moved by Mr. Lutke.
Phil Van Zwol, aye.
And we'll say that you'll second it.
And now second,
you can. And now you can vote.
Phil Van Zwol, aye.
Almond, then aye.
Dick Lutke, aye.
Good. Okay. Mr. Mansour.
Aye.
Welcome back. Statement?
Yeah. We continue to have a very good year. Our revenue is up 36%. We're profitable and EBITDA positive. I have brought some information for you guys. I sent it to Terry beforehand, but I have a bunch of printouts too if you did not get it. One of them is the financial statements through October, where our net income is $760,000, our EBITDA is $1.3 million. On the balance sheet side, as of October 31, we have $5.9 million in the bank. We have no bank debt. And as you guys know, we have commitments from our investors for another $4.7 million. Needed. And again, I have a handout of the October balance sheet. Do you guys need these?
I think we have.
We're projecting it'll be a very good year as well. Our revenues will increase to $31 million this year. That'll be a 33% increase over last year's $23 million. We'll be profitable at the end of the year. Net income of $660,000, a little less than that. EBITDA of $1.7 million. And our early estimate for next year is that our revenue will be around $36 million next year. So another, whatever that is, 15-16% growth next year.
So, Mr. Mansour, looks like with the November forecast, and perhaps you know how you actually did in November, you would be at around $1,100,000 of net income for the year if you hit your November forecast. Is that approximately where you think you'd be at the end of November?
Oh, if we hit the November forecast.
Yes.
What are you looking at there?
What I'm looking at is the year-to-date number.
Is this what I sent this morning?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your year-to-date number of 758.
Yep.
Plus your forecast of making 332,000 in November.
Oh, yeah. We don't have November financials yet, right? The month.
Okay. I mean, what's your sense? Are you on
my
track?
My sense is that we've done better than our projections throughout the year.
Okay.
So I would expect we would have at least that.
Okay.
I would feel comfortable that we're going to be in there.
Okay. So you're going to be at or around $1.1 million of net income through November based on this, based on what you feel.
Well, our net income, I'm just looking really quick here.
Well, I'm looking at a spreadsheet that gave us that's consolidated income statement, and it says fiscal year to date,
okay.
FY19, 758.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So that would be the year-to-date number, right?
That's the year-to-date number, yeah. Add another 300,000, you're going to be in the 1.1
okay.
million.
Okay. The reason I'm interested in this is because you're forecasting a rather large loss in December.
Right. Which we always do.
Right.
Yeah.
But if that loss comes in at or below what you're forecasting, you would still be net income positive for the year.
Yes, right.
So it makes a difference. It makes a big difference to us in the evaluation of the surety bond.
Yeah.
How you're going to end up.
Got it.
For December and going forward.
Right.
So that's why I'm focused on these numbers and where you're going to end up.
Yeah, okay. So that's really helpful. So and just recognize that our fiscal year end is March 31. So through December, you're really talking about 9 months.
I understand
of our
that.
Year. But yes, for the 9 months of that year, we would be profitable. And if you added the 3 months of March through or January through March, rather, I don't know off the top of my head what that was, but it was certainly positive. So if you looked at the whole 12 months for this year, for sure we will be positive.
So what we're looking at right now is you are positive through October. You
mm-hmm.
forecast you're going to be positive in November, and you're forecasted that you're going to be positive at the end of December.
That's right.
The other thing that, you know, we always find interesting is when you know, schools have a big pile of cash, they usually find a way to spend it. And it's usually, you know, well, we should open another school, or we should, you know, add
right.
six more programs, or
right.
so, you know, and that tends to drain the cash flow pretty quickly.
And I think that was a concern that Mr. Lutke brought up
right.
at the last meeting, because I think he must have been on the same wavelength as you talked about a campus in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess guilty as charged, we think like the usual. So, right, we have started a campus in Texas. The numbers that you're looking at have losses that we're experiencing in Texas in them. So if you were to add those back, we're doing even better. The campus is going very well. We started our first group of students at the end of October. And won't have another start until January, but it looks like it's going to be very good. And I would say this campus just has a nursing program, and as does our Tempe campus and our Las Vegas campus, and it is certainly, at least early on the same path that those two campuses exhibited when they were just getting going. So I feel very good about what we're doing there. While it certainly will take additional cash investment, our other campuses, the rest of our company is more than generating what that single campus will use on a monthly basis. So I would not expect that to drain our cash, to be honest with you guys. In fact, our cash has been going up while we've been starting to pay.
And just for our own information, I'm not sure I remember what a campus is in Texas.
It's in Dallas.
Okay. Thank you.
So right now your cash balance is about roughly five and a half million.
Almost six, yeah.
And it's my understanding that you're likely the committee to consider removing the surety bond for Arizona Common.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love for you to remove both that and report it, but the, you know, I look at the surety bond and we paid $43,000 or something like that last year, given our growth. We expect it'll be about a $60,000 charge this year, which is not insignificant. You know, we could spend it on equipment, we could spend it on our students, we could spend it on our staff. I'd even be willing to make another contribution to the state recovery fund. I mean, you know, sending it to the bond seems like the least productive use of this money. Obviously, we're doing very well. We're very strong financially. It would make us slightly weaker. I'm not really that concerned about it, but it does seem to be that there are many ways we could use the $60,000 better than paying for this bond. So, yes, respectfully, would love for you guys to waive that, or at least make a decision after you've seen our year-end financials in the end of March, which I'm confident will show a profit.
Not to rain on the parade, but that's my job.
Yeah.
I would caution making a decision of removing when it still shows 2 years of loss when a rule states 2 years of losses trigger financial concerns. So at least the audit's done instead of based on in-house and projections. No.
Do we know it?
Sorry.
It's your job.
Yes, my job.
And I did that.
We dealt with way too many closures.
Quarterly?
Now we're just going to take this money and put it in a start fund.
I would love to do that as well.
And,
we can always make contributions.
So your fiscal year end is March 31st, and an audit should be completed.
You know, should be completed by June, and you know, okay. That's the likely scenario.
Well, I mean, I have to say, you know, the college's growth, you know, particularly over the last year, the addition of the nursing program has been very impressive. And so we look forward to continued success and be able
it is a rainy day.
Well, it would have been nice to have an early Christmas present, but, you know.
Well, you can make contributions if you guys that much cash sitting around, so.
Well, we'll see about that.
I'm sure I did not deserve that.
Well, thank you very much, and again,
your good presents.
Congratulations on the good work.
Yeah. All right. Happy holidays to you guys.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Wilkins from the Golf Academy.
Unfortunately, as I notified you yesterday, we received notice from ECA representatives that the institution, even though the receivership was approved due to the suspension of ACICS accreditation, all of the ECA colleges across the country, 70 plus campuses will be closing. We have the Golf Academy here. When we spoke to the school yesterday, they will teach through the end of the term, which is the 14th. 19 of the students will graduate, 30 of them will not.
So I think you said 38.
Yeah, 38. And it's our understanding they are working on a transfer agreement with Kaiser University, which has a golf campus in Florida where the students could complete online. Kevin and Keith and I are going to the campus next Tuesday at 10:30 to talk to the students, to tell them, encourage them to transfer if it comes to be, and about STRIVE and federal loans in this program, and how we have the Kevin's already, we've already received one file load of transcripts that will need to be updated, and they'll be now serviced through us, but through Parchment. So I doubt Kevin's here.
Okay. They provided this rate at 1,800, so they've had 1,800 students go through the program, at least that they provided us electronically.
And the Golf Academy has been licensed by the board for, I don't know how many years. Long time. We've never received it applying. We've never had them on financial reporting. It's a lot.
Any questions? Okay. In which case, we're going to move on to imposter college. So you guys are on the phone. Please introduce yourselves again.
Yes. Hi. I'm Heather McAllister, the general counsel of Penn Foster. And I'll let my other colleagues go ahead and introduce themselves.
James Baker, the controller for Penn Foster.
Rebecca McGovern, Director of Regulatory Compliance.
Joanna Johnson, Senior Regulatory Compliance Senior.
Okay.
Would
you like to make a statement?
So thank you so much for reviewing our application this morning. We understand that this is a review for our renewal by the Finance Committee, as well as any updates that you guys need on our quarterly reporting that we're on. So, we're available to answer any questions you may have on any of those topics, so please ask away.
Okay. Questions?
Yeah, just to start with, can you give us an overview of how the parent company is doing?
Sure. This is James Baker with, as I said before, controller. Our overall operation, the parent company and all the schools included, is doing very well. You will note in the financial report, we're still showing a GAAP net loss. That GAAP net loss is driven by two factors. One being some extraordinary unusual items that are non-recurring related to the sale of our business or the purchase of our business by Bain Capital, Double Impact Fund, which took place in April. But then also we have, on an annual basis, we have about $10 million worth of amortization of goodwill and other intangibles, which is a non-cash GAAP deduction, which drives our expenses up and is really what is showing, causing us to show a net loss for our income statements. Our revenues are strong. Our financial performance and cash flows are in line with our expectations. With our most recent quarterly report, we did slightly reduce our full year projected revenues, primarily due to some softness in our initial plan related to our business-to-business, but otherwise, we're on plan, and we expect to hit our profitability numbers for the year.
So will you be out of Red Ink by the end of the year?
I'm sorry?
So will you be showing a loss at the end of the year for parent company.
Yes, yes. The as I said, the net loss is really driven by the non-cash amortization of goodwill and other intangibles. Our EBITDA is positive. We're probably going to be around an $18 million EBITDA number for the year. And we do have this year some high extraordinary costs associated with the purchase related to some additional accounting and legal fees associated with all of the matters that are typical in a transaction like that.
And going forward, will you be booking any more goodwill expense or not?
Yes, the election to amortize the goodwill was made in 2013. So over a 10-year period, that's the GAAP rule, we amortize the goodwill. So that $5.9 million goodwill amortization will occur for at least five more years.
That's $5.9 million per year of goodwill?
That's correct. That's correct. That's
a lot of goodwill.
Yeah, that was, there are two options really with goodwill under GAAP currently. You can elect to amortize it, which we've done, or you can do an annual test for impairment. The annual test for impairment is rather expensive. You have to hire experts, so we felt like we were better suited just to amortize the goodwill and save the money that we would spend on experts. I mean, our business is improving, so actually I think our goodwill from a fair market value is higher, but the GAAP rules say we've got two choices if we chose the amortization.
Penn Foster, whoever's on the line for Penn Foster, has performed well, both from an income standpoint and also in terms of managing its cash flow. The current ratio for the parent company, the last document that I have looks like it's at 0.54. Are there updated documents that show that your current ratio is greater than that, and how are you standing as far as cash is concerned after the infusion from Bain Capital?
So the current ratio, in part, or on a GAAP basis, doesn't reflect one of the things we're a little bit different than Title IV schools, because we don't reflect the revenue from our students except as cash collected, and we don't show their loan balances as receivables. So we have extensive receivables that are essentially off-book because we only reflect those as cash is collected. So that understates our receivables. Just to give you an idea, our forecasted cash collections for the currently enrolled students over the next 12 months will be $33 million. So if you took that as the current asset for receivables, that's $33 million you should add into that number. The other thing that drives our current ratio in a negative direction is that we show 100% of any tuition that is unearned as a deferred revenue item. And our experience is that actually there's about 20% of that that never gets earned. It gets refunded. So we're conservative on the liability side and on the asset side. In terms of a GAAP basis, we think an adjusted GAAP current ratio is more in the 2.0 area because of the off-balance sheet receivables. If you look at our audited financial statements and you look at our cash flows from operations for the 12 months that were ended April 30, our cash flows from operations were about $14 million. So that reflects the change in cash coming in from the business, as well as the depreciation and amortization non-cash charges that we've shown.
So I think I followed most everything except the you said that you do not book a receivable for students that you have enrolled?
That's correct. If a student signs an enrollment agreement, and for example, for $1,000, and they pay $50 to start, we do not reflect the $950 that they owe us on our balance sheet. We do a lot of business with second chance learners, and because there's a significant risk of collection, we don't reflect that as a receivable or revenue until the cash is collected and the student has studied.
All right, so then why is it necessary to book a liability for unearned revenue? You didn't book it
for unearned revenue.
You didn't book it on the,
in the previous.
Why are you booking it on the liability side?
I would blame GAAP for being overly conservative, but an example I just gave regarding the student that signed a contract for $1,000 and paid us $50. In the instance where a student signs a contract for $1,000 and pays us $1,000, but then doesn't study, the full $1,000 is reflected in deferred revenue until they begin to study or their contract expires.
Yes, that's in the case where you received all $1,000.
That's right. That's what that deferred revenue number is. People who have paid in advance of studying.
Okay, but it does not have anything to do with those that only give you $50, though.
That's correct.
My understanding of what he's saying is that the only time they book unearned revenue is when, at the start of the term, somebody pays.
Okay. In full.
In full. And therefore,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Until the term is over, they haven't earned it, or however they amortize that unearned revenue. But they don't book, they must not book the revenue, and they don't book accounts receivable when,
right,
before the student pays. That's what I understand.
Almost back to the cash.
Yeah, that's essentially correct. It's not a typical revenue recognition cycle that is really kind of term based, because we're study as you go. So students can study over a period of time, and we wouldn't earn anything from a student that didn't study until their contract expired. That's provided they haven't canceled. So.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And is there an action that we're recommending?
Renewal, and rather to continue currently recording or maintain the bond.
Okay. So I'd like to entertain a motion recommend to the full board to approve the regular vocational and degree granting license renewal with the stipulation that the $52,044.30 bond be maintained and to continue quarterly reporting. May I have a second?
Just for clarification, you have the authority to approve the renewal.
All right.
It does not have to go through the board.
All right. Well, quite the empowered committee.
Yes. I second the motion.
Okay. And folks from Penn Foster, do you agree to the stipulation?
Could you repeat the stipulation again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, the stipulation is that the $52,044 surety bond be maintained and you continue quarterly reporting.
That's acceptable to me.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right.
Bill Van Zwol, aye.
Paul Bettman, aye.
Dick Lutke, aye.
The ayes have it. Consider yourselves renewed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up is Arizona School of Integrated Studies. I must say, I was in Prescott last week, and I walked right by. It's on my way there, walking over to
Prescott campus. Good morning. Nice to put faces to names finally. So, So I'm here for Anything Operations.
Yeah, and please introduce yourself.
Laura Todd, Regional Campus Director. And then we've got David Merwin on the line to go over financials.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Merwin. I'm the CEO of Trumontra Education Group and kind of by default, Arizona School of Integrative Studies as well.
By default? Okay.
Well, maybe not the best word to use, right?
That's okay.
It's
a great thing.
Arizona School of Integrative Studies is one of the companies underneath the umbrella of Trumontra Education Group. There are four different schools that are under that umbrella, and I operate as CEO of all four.
Okay. Great. Who would like to make an opening statement?
Well, we've gone through the change of ownership application, clarified some questions that were asked, recently submitted some additional financials, it's my understanding, from accounting. And so we're here to respond to any questions or any clarification that you need.
Okay. I think that we already moved to approve the change of ownership and that you were to bring some updated financial statements.
Basically, and then based upon those, if additional requirements were needed other than me paying the bond, if they were to submit the quarterly reporting.
Okay. Got it. I can start us off. So it looks like there's four campuses, right?
Correct.
And so, Mr. Merwin, you were saying that there's four entities, but these four campuses are all Arizona School of Integrated Studies, and then you have three other entities somewhere else with Trumontra.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's correct. Okay. There's a school in New York, one in Maryland, and one in Florida, and then the Arizona School with its four campuses, obviously located there.
Okay. So the losses that you showed in operations seem to come from three of the four campuses. It looks like Tucson is the only campus that shows a profit. Am I right?
Currently, yes.
Yeah, so what's the plan?
Although, if I could just clarify one or two things on that. The way the Arizona School operates is we have resources at each of the campuses, and some of those resources operate across a couple of different campuses, if not all of them. And so it's, even though we've given you a P&L sort of separated by campus, there are a lot of costs and a lot of things that are shared amongst those campuses that probably, if you really dug into it, would, if you normalized it a little better, wouldn't show the types of losses or types of gains just concentrated in one campus. So that's the only thing I would say about that, just one clarification.
Is that something that your accounting office can do in the future so that we don't have to dig deeper?
We wrestle with this a lot. Like how detailed do we get in our reporting and accounting? And for instance, let me just give it for instance. If we have a person who's working in Flagstaff but is also performing, let's say, student services duties in two of the other campuses, it becomes difficult to sort of separate and extrapolate out the amount of salary we're going to assign to each campus. So that's kind of what I was referring to. For the most part, the campuses, as you see them in the P&L, are accounted for very well. Costs are accounted for at each campus level. And there is no doubt that some of our campuses are more profitable than others. But I just wanted to point out there's some anomalies in there. I don't think they're large anomalies, but it's difficult for us to kind of, you know, slice and dice a person's salary to try to figure out exactly how much time they're putting into each campus. Does that make sense?
It does. It doesn't leave us with any better vision of what you're showing us, however. So should we just accept it on face value that the P&Ls that you've provided by location are, for the most part, pretty accurate?
Yes, and I probably should have stated that in the beginning, yes.
On your balance sheet, under current liabilities, listing them by campus, is that unearned tuition that you're referring to as prepaid tuition?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's fine. Thank you.
Sure.
Any questions?
So Mr. Merwin, going back to this income statement that you provided to us, you know, I see in here where you take some costs and you essentially allocate them all equally across the four campuses, like corporate headquarters, and it looks like marketing and accreditation, advertising are kind of allocated equally across the four campuses, which may be appropriate, may not be, but I was thinking that if you took out the corporate headquarters allocation and came to a line called operating income without that allocation in there, in other words, that's a subtotal line, it's called operating income by campus before allocations. That would give us a pretty good sense of whether or not you're making money or losing money on each campus. And then you could have a line called corporate allocations and you could allocate those numbers. And, you know, I think you could do that with a spreadsheet pretty easily. Is that something you think you could do for us in the future?
Yeah, I think you're right. And actually, we are in the process right now, because of the change of ownership, the private equity group has actually asked us to indeed separate out our P&Ls a little differently than we had in the past. It would give you a much more true look at the campuses without this corporate allocation. The other thing I wanted to mention, since you did mention the corporate allocation, I should note to all of you that that our corporate allocations for the year 2018 are actually well above where they were in 2017. So that line item is somewhat overstated from the norm. Just to give you an example, corporate allocations in 2017 were, let me just look at it real quick here, were $75,000 as of that time of the year. So we are approximately $154,000 above where we were in 2017. And there's reasons for that. But I also want to let you know that's not the norm, nor will that be continuing. So our HQ overhead is going to be decreased quite a bit starting in 2019. So the financial performance of ASAS is somewhat understated because of that.
So you were showing a loss for watching a small profit so far in this fiscal year compared to the loss last year, and where do you expect that to end up by the end of quarter four?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear you. Did you ask where do we expect to be by the end of the year?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that because the actual HQ expenses will be decreased in the fourth quarter, even in the last month, you'll likely see that net income number jump up into the 20 to 30,000 range, but it probably won't be any more than that in this fiscal year. 2019, however, when corporate HQ is normalized back to standard levels, I think you'll see ASAS likely will be, net income will be in the 10 to, let's call it 14% range.
So $150,000-ish.
Yeah, we're expecting somewhere between $150,000 to $180,000 in bottom line profit in 2019. Because the young lady who's there with you, Laura, is doing a fantastic job as our regional director out there, and she's actually performed a remarkable turnaround over the last few years in driving discipline into the schools. So she's a very bright and shining star for the organization.
So you got young person, brilliant, bright shining star, and a disciplinarian.
Put him on the spot, ask for a raise right
now. We'll see how those profits turn out in quarter four, and we'll discuss it.
Okay.
I'll probably get the phone call right after this.
As you should.
Do we get to send Mr. Sherman a bill from Mr. Benzwald's consulting?
Yes. We should send all of the schools for the consulting you guys do. Hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking advice from people that have been there, and I think that anybody that's smart in business is going to look to somebody that's got knowledge and glean from that, so... Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah, she's our president.
Yeah. She's good.
Do we need? So we have a motion at the board meeting. Do we need to make a motion to approve the regular rotational license?
I would just confirm it or affirm it. Okay. But if you want them to go on quarterly reporting, you could do that.
I think we should ask for quarterly reporting until we see how things turn out, and hopefully, you know, help them get their reporting to us a little bit better.
Okay.
And we can change that at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All in favor?
Phil Benzwell, aye.
Paul Bettman, aye.
Yeah. Aye.
And did you guys agree to the...
We need a formal motion. I need a second.
Absolutely. I'll second it and carry the motion on my end.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet all of you for today.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Thanks, everybody.
Care to make a statement?
Yes, we're starting to settle in from this transaction and all the excitement that's ensued and understanding the benefits that we've received from this transaction. I noticed when reviewing some of my paperwork, the documents that I submitted to you, I put an incorrect header on one of the financial statements that you may want to look at. I actually labeled the balance sheet as the consolidating schedule of operating expenses. So that is our consolidating balance sheet. And I apologize, and I can just submit a revised copy.
Which date are we at?
Everything is January 1 to October 5.
Okay.
There's two sheets that they both say operating consolidating schedule.
Okay.
But one is actually the balance sheet.
So the one that says consolidating schedule of operating expenses, is that the balance sheet?
They both say that. And as a matter of fact, there's two sheets that say that. One is an income statement and one is a balance sheet.
Looks like the first one is a balance sheet.
And that is how they print it out. The balance sheet should be the first one, but I don't know if anybody reordered their documents. We've evaluated it, and right now it's going to take a hit. We're not sure how badly, but we are prepared to put forth a letter of credit to substantiate it.
So, forgive me if I'm probing too deeply. How long have you both been in the school business?
30 years.
30, okay.
And close to 15 for myself.
So they're going to go on reporting. They're going to go on cash management restrictions. When your composite score goes under 1.0 and you're going to post a letter of credit to kind of prop things up, and you're prepared to do that.
Correct.
Okay. So you went out, did you borrow the money to pay the legacy owners?
There's a term loan,
yeah.
And then there's some seller notes as well.
Right. And so the term loan was
$5 million.
So that's what you're servicing.
Correct.
Okay. And you're hoping to get everything paid off on this debt over how many years?
Within about 7 years.
7 years. You have how many full-time participants in the ESOP?
about 65.
And the loan that's showing on the ESOP is also for 7 years? Or did you stretch that out?
The loan is for 3 years. The term loan, the $500, is a 3-year amortization. And then the notes begin paying back immediately after that. And those are anywhere from a 3 to a
7.
4 to 7.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then you add the 3, so you're at 7 to 10.
So their individual accounts are going to be, it's like backing up a dump truck and just dumping all this value into their accounts.
They being who?
The ESOP participants. So you're taking roughly $39 million of value and dividing that by 65 people, and that value is going to be put into their accounts over somewhere between 3 to 7 years. And the most value that they can have put in their account annually is $54,000.
That I'm not, I do not know about.
You need to, whoever is your counsel needs to know that ERISA governs the amount that you can set aside. ERISA governs your deferred comp, right? So 401ks, IRAs, et cetera, et cetera. So an ESOP is governed by that set of laws. And the most that can go in there is $54,000. So it's not too late to amend the plan to make sure that you've stretched it out long enough to be sure that you're able to do what you want to do. You're not showing any, you're listing in the documents who one of the trustees is for the ESOP trust. Do you have others that you're not listing on the flowchart?
Not as a trustee, it's just who Dale Craig is.
As a sole trustee.
Mm-hmm. There will be additional board members. There will be 2 board members that he would approve.
Schools in our industry that have ended up on heightened cash management have eventually failed. It's a fact. It's not an opinion. It's just that when they end up on that, it's very difficult for them to get out from under it, because it restricts your ability to receive your cash in a timely fashion. So I'm hoping that somewhere somebody has thought through what you signed up for.
Sure. Well, I think in our communications with Department of Ed, they're looking very closely at the specifics of the transaction. And initially had said, because the ESOP, because their definition of change of ownership is change of ownership resulting in change of control, which ours is not resulting in change of control, they wanted to look at the specifics of it to see how they're classifying it. That doesn't change the fact that the financials and the composite score will take a hit, and we're anticipating that, but how they propose to handle that has been up for discussion. So they've been receptive to looking at the scenario because of the seller's ongoing commitment, and you know that carry back does change the picture a little from what those communications have entailed.
that mean that you would intend to pay off the full $39 million based on the net income that you're, you know, or the positive cash flow that you're generating over the next 7 years? Because your net income, you know, looks like it's in the, this is 9 months, and, you know, maybe $4 million. Right. So you have a plan to grow that?
Yes. We anticipate growth. Because any healthy organization should. Yeah. And the consulting team has made projections with us. And, there's a team of people we have. It's, I don't want to appear too overly humble, but it's more than just Tracy and I. Have gone into these calculations and feel that everything can work. And it's a great benefit to our organization and the ownership as well.
Okay.
So now, did you convert to S?
Effective 1/1/2019.
We went to C. Yeah. We went from LLC to C.
Right.
And then on 1/1, we will be an S.
And that's a big piece of the equation, and the decision to go to ESOP was the benefit on the tax-exempt eligibility at that point.
So the shareholders, the legacy shareholders, will be receiving a dividend to cover their taxes? Or are you hoping that everything is viewed that the ESOP wholly owns the company?
ESOP wholly owns all outstanding shares.
So it's going to be reported as a 100% ESOP.
100% tax exempt beginning 1/1.
Okay.
So can we request I make a motion that we have continued quarterly reporting until such time as we feel it's no longer required?
Just for clarification, they have not been on quarterly reporting, so we need to be placing them on quarterly.
I'd like to make a motion to place them on quarterly reporting. Bill Van Tool, aye.
Albert, an aye.
Including the aye.
Do you agree to the stipulation for quarterly reporting?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Excusing us from appearing at the last quarter of the Terry, we were both in the air. So, appreciate that. In summary, we are, as of third quarter, in the black. We have a small profit. We projected that, and to use a highly technical term, we promised the board that we would be, in fact, profitable, and we are. In terms of how the school is doing, we are now we have been vetted by and approved by VA Voc Rehab and are their preferred school. The three schools that are required to be visited by students who are eligible for the WIOA grant, 90% now are selecting ABL. We have about an 85% plus certification first attempt exam pass rate. So we're having significant success in learning transfer. We anticipate being qualified for the GI Bill, which will give us many, many more veteran students in approximately a year or less. Our financials have to be more consistently solid in order for us to qualify, and we expect that to happen in a year. And Tom is going to speak to all of the different boards and different activities that we're engaged in with Maricopa County, City of Phoenix, and the state.
As part of our business development efforts and becoming stewards of the community of the state of Arizona, which is also part of our networking activity, we've been asked to join the Maricopa County Workforce Development Board, and we've been asked to join the Governor's Workforce Arizona Council, and we've been asked to join the Governor's Arizona Cyber Team subcommittees working with the ACA, OEO, and Department of Education and others. And that has certainly made our brand much more visible within the state, and it's attracted a number of different organizations, from VA organizations to government state organizations, that are now interested in hearing about us and talking to us and doing business with us. And that has led to more and more organizations like Boeing and General Dynamics learning about us as well, because we all sit on the same boards now.
Chris?
Your projected year-end, what does that look like? Would it be in the black?
We are at profitable, projecting $45,000 from our current $25,000 right now, and that is on track.
Mr. Van Paul?
Well, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the current profit loss statement that you have.
Sure.
I noticed that you have some rather large expenses for outside services, including consulting fees and professional fees. It's about 40% of your total administrative expenses. Is that something that you will incur going forward, or is that just sort of getting the approvals for the things that you were working on, or? What is that?
That is cumulative for the 20 years we've been in business. We're not increasing that number anymore. I have to actually think about what's in consulting services. Obviously, accounting is pretty obvious.
Right, yeah.
And we did recently change accounting entities. Our long-term CFO has retired. Okay. So we've now gone out to a third-party accounting firm,
okay,
and having them come in and do the forensics of the organization to get them up to speed, and then to recalibrate all of our accounting records, that certainly costs a fair amount of money. So that's it's not a one-time fee, but it's a short-term.
Sure. I'm just kind of wondering $25,000 profit is not tremendously large profit for, you know, your organization here, and you know, you're spending quite a bit of money on these fees. I'm just wondering if that's a one-shot deal, or if that's something that you know, is going to go forward, and it's going to be a struggle to get a decent return on the amount of investment that you have.
Completely agree. For us, after having been in the red for so long, that being in the black is obviously significant to us, even though it's a very, very small number. You really asked a good question. This is, I have to look what's in there. I don't know what's in there. Shame on me.
Okay, all right. Well, the other thing I would ask is, you know, do these include payments to yourselves? And that's just, you know.
No, we're considered officer salary.
Okay.
And we haven't taken an officer salary
all right.
for some time.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you. So, yeah, I would encourage you to look into that. If you can, you know, control those costs, that could significantly enhance the profitability of your organization.
We will report on that next quarter for sure.
Thank you. Are they on quarterly reporting? Or what?
We are.
We are.
We are.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Great. Wonderful. Good. That's all I have.
Good. Another consultation with Ms.
Mr. Raswal. Proves beneficial. Because that is a big chunk of money.
Yes.
More than that.
Okay. Full aggressive.
Okay, yeah, that'd be interesting. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday season.
You as well, enjoy.
Next up is Brighton College. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Sean, Director of Student Services, representing Brighton College.
Okay, so we have Paul's name there, but not him.
D-I-X-O-N.
Tom Dixon?
Yep.
And Mr. Zagnoni is not here?
No.
Okay, do you care to make a statement?
Well, no, I didn't actually prepare a statement. It's just the first time sitting in front of a financial meeting, so my statement's going to be under there again this manual. I'm just going to throw that out there, so.
All right.
Try to be gentle. I know it's not pretty, but let's take it.
Okay. Who wants to start?
Can you bring us up to date on your accreditation? Or is that all scanned?
So we just received our chair report back on Monday, so we're going through right now looking at what we need to respond with. It was a very positive response. We do have a few pieces that we need to send back to them to January 7th. So that's where we're at right now, just formulating a response to what they sent us.
You're aware you need to share that in your response?
Correct.
But we have not gotten a copy of the chair report.
We just received it. The one who received it is actually out of town and dealing with his sister or her sister's death. So we've been holding tight. We're going to have a meeting on Monday. So Terry, why don't you get the office today?
Okay.
He said that it was a positive.
Yeah, well, that compares to our last rate accreditation visit a year ago.
Right. And that addressed the show plan? Letter. Was it a regular presentation?
No, it was special.
To address the show cause letter from May.
It was basically a whole reprocess of the whole thing in 8 months, so.
Okay.
Any forecasting for year end, what do you feel the company will be?
Given where what DAC, what we've been doing with DAC throughout the entire year, we've been pretty stagnant. A lot of pieces that have been kind of left in the dust, so we've been building on that, so that's what a lot of our expenses are going, so I can't foresee us going positive, unfortunately. We're still enrolling students, yeah.
And how has that gone according to your...
We should actually, I want to venture to say we may be within 10 students of our goal, so that's happy with that.
I don't have any specific questions.
Okay. So I believe that we already approved, and so this is pure reporting.
Right.
You did a great job.
Would it be not beneficial if Mr. Zagnoni himself would? Maybe again.
Yeah, that was our expectation.
We have requested that several times, so it would be helpful.
But you did a great job.
Thank you.
You seem to sound like a guest.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
CDI, Commercial Divers Internet.
Good morning.
My first opening statement is that I promised the board I'd bring a finance director, and she is here today.
Tracy, I'm sorry, what's your last name?
So a little bit of update on us is within the last quarter since we met, we had our accreditation site visit for canvassing from the council on occupational education. We came out and they had zero findings, so November 6th, we were voted into candidacy in Jacksonville, Florida. Tracy and I attended the Academy workshop number 2 and got through that, and we are currently preparing the beautiful self-study report. So that is going as planned. I'm tasked with number 9, standard 9 and standard 2, organizational and some of our policies and our only program. Also has been going on is the plane that crashed in Lake Pleasant November 17th. We've been contacted to recover that from 100 foot of water. I personally dove on it last night, and we're going to raise that Monday, and it'll be on Channel 3 News. They're going to come out and get on our vessel and do a deal on it. So it's really beneficial for our students to be able to see stuff like that, and that's really why we're doing this. And so that's kind of what's been going on. Our enrollment numbers are growing. We struggle with a lot of new schools where it's hard to get financing options until you get everything in line. Don't have to preach to the choir on that. So that's kind of where we are. And on that, if you have financial questions, I'll be glad to hopefully get those answered this time a little better than I did last time.
Okay. Can I just ask, for starters, you showed a big jump in tuition in this past quarter, I think. $308,000 cumulative through the first 2 quarters, and then comes up to $944,000. And that's without the plane at the bottom of the Pleasant.
Correct. When I came on board, I did a full audit of financials from January 1 forward and discovered that there had been revenue that was not recognized. So financials have appeared poorer than they should have been throughout the year.
We were wondering that the enrollments really didn't go up all that much.
Correct.
And so we were wondering, where did the money come from?
Correct. Students were in the system. Funding had been received, but the opposite side of the transaction was not all in the books. So I've been taking care of that since I came on board. So audited financials were completed for 2017. Composite score was 3.0. We had a very large asset base. There's over $1 million in assets on the books due to the nature of the organization, which is what led to our approval for candidacy. Projection, full year 2018, we're looking at approximately $1.34 million in tuition, with net income approximately $500,000 after appreciation.
So the 2017 financial statements that we had that showed a loss of $219,000, were those the pre-audited?
Those were pre-audited financials.
Okay.
We'll provide you with another copy, an updated copy of audit.
So you expect to restate those, but the audited financials are going to look different than the in-house financials.
The audited financials do look a little bit different than the in-house review financials. And then we will be having audited financials again for 2018 as part of the accreditation process. And we'll forward those to you as well once they're completed. We anticipate that will be done in February.
Okay. Your fiscal year end this one?
12/31.
So the loss of $219,000 they showed in 2017.
In reality, it's a little less than that. It was like $173,000 over the adjustments to the financials.
And so, but even so, you're looking at over a $600,000 swing year over year.
And in large part, in 2017, loss numbers, there was a lot of startup costs in those numbers, a lot of expense that we has not continued through in 2018.
Would those normally be amortized?
Some of them have been. Startup costs have been. There were some things that were expensed, but that's part of that. Some extraordinary expenses that happened in 2017 that are not going to reoccur going forward.
Any questions?
No, I just would say I'm very, very happy to see that you know, we have turned the corner and are in a positive net income environment, so it makes our job a lot easier.
Us too.
So we're very happy to see you, and we hope to see you again.
Yeah, you will. And not just on TV.
I'm still working on that Manhattan Beach.
Did you get the book?
I've requested it for Christmas.
Oh.
So it's coming, I think. And I want to thank Fred and his organization. I've been going to, that's been an instrumental helping us. You know, this was over there last week, and it really does help.
Thank you, and very much.
Thank you.
One thing in closing I would like to do is maybe test the waters for when Price Palm does our audited financials at this year. Maybe if everything goes as planned, maybe try to. I love coming down here, but maybe once a year or so. But we'll talk about that later.
We did a mock site visit with our hired consultant at the end of November, 2 weeks ago, and it went really well. A few little things that we need to tighten up, but she was overall very happy with the status of where we're at and how well prepared everybody was, and so that was exciting to hear. But lots of prep and stuff we still need to get done and cleaned up over the next month, which is good. The commission will meet in June, and then we'll have a notice in July on the whether you achieve accreditation or not, or somewhere in the middle, it sounds like there could be an option for you. So, fingers crossed for a different result. I do have an update from the last financial meeting. I put it in the footnotes of the report about the discussion about how to recognize the contribution after the three-year gift agreement from the foundation. After meeting with you, or having this meeting, I went and met with our auditors and our consultant accountant, and they recommended what was put in the footnotes. And so that it's best if we recognize it as deferred revenue with an offsetting receivable from the foundations, and that CJ will recognize the income in three portions for the contribution on the income statement. And so that's what they all agreed or discussed, and then we all agreed upon doing so. I hope that helps answer some of the questions from the last meeting.
I think that resolved the concerns that I have of not showing that kind of revenue spread over the upcoming years, so you would have ended up with a loss on your income. This sounds like this will address.
So on the master donor agreement,
There
are calls for specific times for the installments to occur. happening per the schedule?
They come quarterly. The prior year one was every quarter, so they were coming on the 15th of the start of the new quarter. So the first installment of the gift agreement from the foundation for the new agreement should be January 15th of 19. So
your current, I guess my biggest question is your current as of today.
Yes.
That'd be a good day to get the tent.
I know. We were busy that day.
Oh, by the way.
Okay, we're good.
Great.
Anything else?
No, we're good.
Ms. Harrison.
Thank you. I will not see you all tomorrow. I'm just going to be in the city. So our CEO will be the one who's reporting the next one with our accountant.
Well, you'll be back. Right?
Well, isn't it March? Like March 22nd? I have a baby February 15th. So while I think I'm Superwoman, I don't think I'm that good. So, but I wish her well. And,
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Right. Forest College. Come on down.
Hi.
Hey.
Jason Holman, campus president, Forest College. Great. And I believe we have Steve Budosh and Jason Beaton online.
Yeah, Jason's here. I'm the director of financial planning and analysis. Steve is tied up and can't get out of a prior engagement, so I'll try to answer anything that might come up.
Okay. Who would like to make an opening statement?
I will. Really nothing major to report. We're still not dropping any students. We don't plan to drop any for the duration at the rate things are going. Our expenses are quite a bit lower than the budget consistently, and our revenue is a bit higher than expected consistently because we're not dropping any students. Other than that, everything is, all our outcomes are fantastic. So on the campus level, things are operating as they should.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. You guys are in teach out, right?
Correct.
And the expectation is to 12/22/19.
Correct. 12/23/19. Whatever that
part is. Okay. How many students do you have in there?
We have 47 today.
Do you have enough cash to get through the 2019?
The corporate office has always, as they have always consistently done, they've pledged their continued support through the duration.
Yes, that's correct. There's no change in that. We will see it through to the end. We have enough cash to support them.
Is this the only location that you're closing this year?
We have three other campuses in process. It's the only one in Arizona. There's a Grand Prairie, Texas location, Erie, Pennsylvania, and Ravenna, Ohio just finished. We just had our last students graduate this past month in November.
Okay. Good. All right. Great. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Let's galvanize.
Hi, I'm Diana Bowles. I'm the general manager for Galvanize Phoenix.
Good morning.
Okay.
Anyone on the phone?
Yes, hi. This is Maria Leo, and I'm the VP controller.
Okay.
Maria, could you spell your last name, please?
Sure. It's L-E-A-L.
Okay. Make an opening statement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a busy year for us. We continue to grow the Phoenix campus. We reached our 18-month mark. The campus is full. I always like to remind you of our model. I think you know this, where we bring industry and education together. So we have the school on our campus. We also have 115 different companies working out of Galvanize Phoenix now. So it's a busy place. It's a vibrant environment. And many of those companies are now hiring our students, so it's been a great partnership. Our largest hiring partners in Phoenix are now McKesson and USAA. So things are moving forward. We continue to enroll students. The campus is at 100% occupancy in terms of the companies working there, and our classrooms are continuing to fill. One thing that this board is well aware of is that we acquired HackReactor in July. We completed that acquisition and approval in all of the states that we operate in. So what that means for us is our previous web development program is going to be replaced by the software engineering curriculum. So it's training a full stack developer, but we are moving to the HackReactor curriculum for that particular program starting in January. We've already submitted for our approval on that, so we're on track to move forward. So we're in the process of making the transition into that program. And last month, you may have seen this in the news, we signed a partnership with Maricopa Community College District, an articulation agreement. So Maricopa has approved our students who complete the software engineering program to articulate that for credit towards a Maricopa degree. So it's been a wonderful partnership and creates an additional pathway for students who want tech education, but they also want to get their associate's degree.
Anything else?
Those are the highlights.
So since this is the finance committee, some financial questions. Do you have any financial updates?
The report that we submitted, the highlights on that are our revenues fell about $100,000 below what we forecasted. However, we operate a very efficient organization, and we were able to limit our expenses. Our expenses were actually low by up to about $200,000. So that helped our overall bottom line performance. As we're migrating to the new HackReactor model, we're taking a look at everything and the efficiencies of how we operate that program, because they have a very effective, efficient model.
Okay.
So right now you're trending positive. You've got you're showing $60,000 year to date net income. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's for the Phoenix campus. Right. Right. And where are you guys at from a P&L standpoint for the parent company?
Okay, so for the parent company, I'm going to defer to Maria. I'm happy to refer to Maria.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Maria.
Hi, I'm happy to speak to that. Hi. Hi. The total revenues of about $32.7 million. Most of our expenses are due to rent and payroll, which amounted to approximately 80% of the total cost and expenses that are listed on the report of 43.8. There was expenses that are included in the other expense line that was associated with the conversion of some convertible notes that we had on our books as a result of the Series C financing, as well as the acquisition of HackReactor that occurred in July of 2018. But overall, that net loss of 20.1, you know, is sure to be to be improved by the end of the year and going into next year. From a balance sheet perspective, current ratios of about 1.92, close to about 2 to 1. These financial statements, the balance sheet is on a consolidated basis with HackReactor included in there. I think we do have a positive outlook for our accounting position. The condition of the company currently is in a state of improvement with our investments, and we project that we will be able to meet a positive cash flow by the end of next year. So that's currently where our position stands.
So the parent company will show a profit this year?
We
No, not on a consolidated basis. From an EBITDA standpoint, we expect to be positive by the end of next year.
So what? When is your year end?
12/31.
Pardon me?
It's 12/31, calendar year end.
Okay. And are you going to have audited financial statements for that period of time?
We will. Our audit is expected to be finalized about May or June of next year, certainly before the end of June. We've got 180 days to turn it around. We are scheduled to have the audit and field work with our KPMG auditors in the April-May timeframe. We haven't solidified the date yet, but that's when it's to occur. The opening balance sheet of the halfway after acquisition is to occur the first week of January, with a hopeful completion before the end of January, and that's an audit as well.
Okay. You know, our concern is that the parent company is generating a large net loss, and we appreciate the balance sheet, but we don't see a statement of cash flows here to give us an idea of where the money is coming from to fund these losses. And so I think you're scheduled to come back in March. We would like to see a little bit more detail on both the P&L and the statement of cash flows so we understand how you're managing this process, because it's great that the local operation is profitable, but if the parent corporation is not profitable or cannot sustain cash operations, then it won't matter. So we'd really appreciate it if you could provide us with a little bit more detail on the P&L and statement of cash flows in March.
Absolutely. I can provide a cash flow statement.
Okay. Yes. That would be very helpful. Well, for us.
By my, just sort of like in my head accounting, I think that the losses over the life of Galvanized have been somewhere at the end of this year, the $70 million range?
91.
So what's the, just how to, from a business plan strategy standpoint, like if year over year, Galvanized has seen, you know, roughly a $20 million loss, what's going to be different in 2019? You know, and I know, like you said, you know, personnel went here in very, very high expense markets, Austin, New York, San Francisco. And so what's the plan for next year that would be so significantly different from the last quarter?
Yeah, I can touch on that, Maria, if that's okay, and you can add to that.
Oh. Sure, of course, and also with me is John Gamma, and he is our director of finance. And so if we need to have him on, he's happy to jump on as well.
Okay.
Thanks, Diane.
So in terms of big picture, where is Galvanized going next year, the acquisition of Hacker Actor was crucial for a couple of reasons. Hacker Actor was in four markets. They were in New York, Austin, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Galvanize is in three of those markets, three of those very expensive real estate markets. We have beautiful facilities, campuses, dynamic places to learn. The acquisition of Hack Reactor gives us the ability to deliver their curriculum, which is it's a 12 to 18 week program versus our 24. Okay, so you can have more courses per year. So you have more revenue opportunity right off the bat. Second piece is we have moved the HAC reactor, we've closed the HAC reactor locations in New York, Austin, and San Francisco, and moved that program onto the Dalhousie campus. So where we had two rental expenses in the consolidated organization, we've now removed those to one in two, I would say San Francisco and New York are obviously our most expensive markets, but Austin is not cheap either. In Phoenix, we have a little different situation. It's easier to manage costs in Phoenix because I don't have the exorbitant real estate that some of our other markets are in. So the consolidation of facilities themselves is the first big driver in improved revenue performance. The standardization of the software engineering program is the second piece. So in the HAC reactor model, the 12-week immersive course is scheduled the exact same spot, at the exact same time across all campuses. So you have a much more effective admissions team because you can pull resources to drive different markets because they're all on the same schedule. Galvanize's programs in the past were different in different markets. So part of the appeal of the acquisition is the standardized model that they have because it can be much more efficient. Galvanize are the beautiful campuses, the environment, the community, the hiring partners, the McKessons and Banner Health, so the people of the world that we need our students to get jobs, and they're on our campuses. HAC Reactor has a very standardized educational model and very streamlined, cost-effective approach to it. So for us, that was the appeal of both provide high-quality education. Ours was a slightly different model, but so we've kind of taken the best of both worlds. What that will allow us to do is drive more student fill rate into the courses because we can standardize admissions, we can put more resources towards specific start dates. The other piece that we acquired with the HAC Reactor acquisition is the remote program. They have a much more robust remote offering than Galvanize had, and it's all standardized with the 12-week program. Again, same start date, same. It was very much a standardized approach. So from a financial standpoint, it's easier to make that cost effective. That program's up and running. We didn't have to add any additional resources. Now we're able to drive more students to it just by virtue of the Galvanize campuses pushing into it. So where we acquired efficiency, it's going to help us be able to not have to deploy as many resources, but still investors.
Okay. What was the acquisition cost to get? Thank you, Paul.
And just FYI, the acquisition was reviewed by our AG and the trivia function. So we did it.
And is that reflected in the balance sheet? I mean, I'm not sure how it's structured.
There's 32, 20 million of goodwill. So.
The merger occurred approximately July. So the savings, the efficiencies you're speaking of in terms of rent, really from July of this year?
Yeah.
Forward.
We had to get approval in the various states that we operate in order to physically move the locations. But I think it was fourth quarter that each one of them are going to the consolidated location, the single location.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's some one-time costs incurred in moving them. But once you get past that, you can save the rent of the second location.
Right. Okay. All right. Love to hear from, is it the finance director?
Yeah, Maria.
Maria or the gentleman?
John.
Maria
and John.
Hi, John. So, John.
John.
Hi, John. Dr. Midman asked the question of what's going to be different going forward in 2019. Would you like to hear your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, next year, we expect, as Diana mentioned, an increase in enrollment from the HAC Reactor program. They're known as a better program. Also, the data science program across the board, we expect a ramp up in the demand. There is a slight sort of down percentage or so from the co-working space, and that's just consolidated view. We have an enterprise business, which was corporate training at an IBM or Allstate big corporation that we all expect we to increase next year. We feel like that's very beneficial for the institution itself and for us, and they tend to have high margins.
I can touch a little bit on the enterprise approach because I've been involved in several programs. Our largest enterprise partner is actually driven up the Phoenix relationship, and as USAA, we are presently starting a program with their intention to train 1,500 developers across their organization over the next 2.5 years, and that's USAA corporate, so San Antonio, Plano, Phoenix. The corporate training, we are seeing a tremendous growth in corporate training because our program, our consumer program, is training junior-level developers. So they're coming out of the program, and increasingly our business partners, because everyone's got a shortage of tech talent in their organization, they're looking at their organizations, and yes, they can hire our students as junior developers, but they need help with upskilling the existing employee base. So organizations like Allstate, USAA, McKesson, Cognizant Training, they are coming to us. Our pipeline is full in enterprise. In fact, we're struggling to find instructors sometimes to meet the need. But we're seeing tremendous growth in that area because companies can't hire their way out of the crops. They've got legacy systems, they've got infrastructures that have been set up for years, and they need to upskill their organizations to make them modern software developers. So that's the enterprise division that John was referring to. And much of those relationships come out of our campuses. The USA one came out of my campus from them hiring 7 of our graduates. So it's a very, I share that because it's an integrated model. So the consumer side helps build the enterprise brand because our students are going to work for those companies, and the companies are saying that we need more of those kind of students, and we also need to train our existing teams.
I have a question for Ms. Maria.
Yes.
Maria, we were looking at, I guess, a press release that said that, you know, the purchase of ACT Reactor was financed through a $32 million Series C financing led by an entity through. And we're looking at the balance sheet that you provided as of 9/30, and there's not $32 million of financing on this balance sheet. So what's different?
So it is currently sitting within our goodwill as well as in the balance sheet underneath the additional paid-in capital.
Okay, so they took stock as part of the purchase price?
Yes, we acquired their assets and assumed all of their liabilities and eliminated their equity.
Okay, so you didn't finance really $32 million.
No, we received $32 million in Series C financing, and the acquisition cost was approximately $20 million.
Okay. And so that's where the goodwill came from, basically.
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And as I mentioned earlier, the opening balance sheet will be audited by our KPMG auditors. In fact, we're in the midst currently of putting together our PBCs. So there will be adjustments made to increase the fair values of certain assets that we acquired and a change potentially to the deferred revenue.
Okay. So the current balance sheet, long-term liability of $12.6 million and current portion of the note payable, $3.5 million. Is that related to the acquisition?
The note payable and current and long term includes financing of that
that the company has received to put in some equipment and furniture at some of our locations. And we also incurred a $5 million long-term debt when we acquired Hack Reactor.
So that's not separately stated, right? That's just lumped in with your other long-term liability, other long-term notes payable.
Yes, it's in the current and long-term fees.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll be anxiously looking forward to looking at the information that you provide us in March. Help us understand how much progress you made in getting to profitability and managing your finances. So thank you very much.
You are most welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. John Rugama, R-U-G-A-M-A.
R-U-G-A.
Great.
Thank you, Galvanize.
Thank you.
M-A.
M is in Mary.
It's Maria Leal, M-A-R-I-A-L-E-A-L, and John Rugama, R-U-G-A-M-A, and we're double-checking that right now.
Okay.
John, R-U-G-A-M-A.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Medline.
We're done. You did it.
Yeah, you were first.
You're nice.
All right, run one.
That was 11:54.